Blog Talk Radio.
Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the
ladies and gentlemen out there, this is the return of Fantasy Hockey X. I am your host, Chris Wassel. I'll be running the sucker solo tonight, or this morning, as we bring you the Saturday DFS hockey slate. That's right, the NHL season has started. That's the best part of it all here. Now, basically, for those that don't know, we're running this... not necessarily bare bones, but we're going to have some fun with it anyway. That's always been the goal of the show. And, you know, we will preview some slates, and you know, we'll even have the occasional show where we just throw one up and have fun recapping some slates as well, just to give the listeners out there a little bit of a different perspective of what it's like in the fantasy hockey world. Even this year, we will do a spend a little time more than we have in the past, delving into some season-long issues and such. It's a little bit different. Christopher Pacheco has moved on, and so has Michael Clifford. The Vots will be joining me on occasion, and a few other daily fantasy heavyweights in the industry as the season goes along. So hang on tight and enjoy the ride, as they say. Saturday features 10 games, 9 of which are on the main slate. Now, look, first and foremost, what you need to know for Saturday is this. It is the first week of the NHL season. Many unexpected things are going to happen. And if you think they're not, well, you would be wrong. That is just how this works. The first few weeks are always a total crapshoot. There are some things that happen that you expect to happen. However, there are things that just defy all logic. Again, there are a lot. Who am I kidding? There are boku options on Saturday night. As always, check the goaltending. Check and make sure. It's important. Only because... well, we had it happen again on Friday where FanDuel forgot the backup goalie. Not that it really might or might not have mattered, but that's beside the point. Again, these are things that are going to happen, especially early on in the season. It's unfortunate, but that's just how it goes. And the fun part is going to be a little bit different, and we're going to enjoy the ride. We really are. Personally, you know, it's been a bit of a tough go of it at times. Not going to lie. Tonight, for example, perfect textbook example for Friday night. High event game in Columbus. Columbus hits a few posts. Carolina doesn't. Carolina wins 3-1. Literally as simple as it sounds. Crazy, but true. But there are all sorts of nutty sort of things that could happen. Basically, it's time to begin. We've got about 4 minutes to go through each game. That's the goal, which will leave us a couple minutes to tease the New Jersey-Edmonton game for those that are degenerate enough to play the early game as well, the all-day slate. So as Duke Nukem would like to say,
come get some.
That's right, kids. That is right. First game on the schedule for a Saturday night. Florida travels to Tampa Bay. Hey, what better way to start this with the old Southeast Division rivalry of rivalries? There's tons of intrigue with this. You figure this is Florida's opener, this is Tampa's opener. Expectations are extremely high in Tampa Bay, even though they did not land Eric Carlson and they do not have Steve Yzerman as general manager anymore. Little of that matters. Bottom line is you still have an extremely loaded Tampa Bay team. And you have a Florida team that thinks they can compete. A lot of times how this game goes, one of Tampa's two top lines goes off a little bit, and then there's some bottom six scoring out of nowhere that tilts it. That's kind of how a lot of these games go. Florida, the debut of Mike Hoffman will be interesting. It looks like he'll be on the second line. He'll also be entrenched on the power play as well. See how long that lasts. The expected goalie matchup, at least as of right now, is Roberto Luongo versus Andre Vasilevsky. Vasilevsky, as everybody knows, got off to an unbelievable first half. Looked like he was a shoo-in to win the Vezina, and then wound up basically finishing third in the vote with a subpar last quarter of the season. Arguably, maybe half. Where do you want to go here? There's lots of options. This is a wide open slate. We're going to emphasize this from the beginning, and we're going to keep emphasizing this early and often throughout. You have to keep an open mind here. If you don't, you're going to get killed. You're going to get killed in the slate. You really are, because there's too many options on this to even think. Personally, from this game, you have to look at Tampa's power play, at least their first unit. Florida, I'm interested in the second line because I do think Tampa will try and stack early against that top Florida line. They've done it in the past to some mixed results. And, projections tend to tip this in favor of Tampa. I know people don't necessarily believe that. A pretty heavy tip. Matter of fact, our good old win probability suggests that Tampa has a 58% chance of winning this game. I'm one to tend to somewhat agree. One of the more notable things is shot projection tends to be high. It tends to be 65 to 70 plus for this game. With both teams in the 30 to 35 range at a minimum, which means you pick the right goalie, yes, you're probably, the problem is you're probably going to give up two or three goals, and that in creates a little bit of inherent risk because there's going to be slightly better options down the road as we go down the slate. So that is something again to keep in mind. All right, next up on the slate, Montreal travels to Pittsburgh. If anybody watched the Pittsburgh Washington game at all, that may somewhat be an indication of how the season is going to go for Pittsburgh. It's going to be wild and crazy. Ultimately, it took 7 goals to win a game on Thursday night. I'm telling you, this game could feature quite a few goals. Look, Montreal surprised a lot of people opening night against Toronto. I'd even argue that Montreal probably deserved the 2 points more than the Maple Leafs, and not just from a shot total standpoint. But as the game went on, the more dangerous shots actually did start to tilt a little bit towards Montreal. You wouldn't have known that in the first half of the game. One of the more hilarious stats was 1 point during the game, shots were about almost, I'd say, nearly midway through. Shots were 15-15. And the high danger chances were 9-3 Toronto. Now that leveled out a little bit as the game went on, but that was an indication early of just how dangerous Toronto was. Here's the thing. Pittsburgh is vulnerable defensively. Everybody knows this. Defense and goaltending even. Matt Murray did not look anywhere near good on Thursday night. Now, yeah, he could bounce back. Absolutely. But there's a lot of options in play. I mean, you have Montreal's top line. Max Domi actually looked more than serviceable. He looked actually very good. He had 2 assists. Artturi Lehkonen scored for Montreal. Their power play is a work in progress, but the problem is, and you could argue this, Montreal's penalty kill is a work in progress too, and that plays right into Pittsburgh's hands. It's basically, which power play do you want to choose? Do you go Malkin instead of Crosby? It all really depends on how much money you want to spend and how much you want to stack here. Look. Malkin's prices are already crept up a little bit. It was $7,800 the other night. It is now $8,400. That didn't take very long, needless to say. Jake Guentzel's price creeped up to $6,900. It was $6,000. Phil Kessel's price was $7,000. It's up to $7,600 now on FanDuel. So, needless to say, There's a lot of options to consider. And again, even Chris Letang, who was in the high 5,000s on FanDuel, is now 6,500. There are going to be a lot of Pittsburgh stacks on Saturday night, and rightfully so. I mean, look, projections don't lie. Pittsburgh is projected to score nearly 4 goals in this game. That's a lot. That is absolutely a lot. So it has to be considered. It's really just a question of which line you play. Do you go 1? Do you go 2? Do you get cute, mix the power play, try and get some, try to gamble with a little bit of Letang exposure, play around with Malkin Kessel, Getzel, Letang in a lineup or two. That's a distinct possibility. And then you can kind of back your way around and go, say, maybe Crosby, Guentzel, Letang to save a little bit of money. But if I'm going contrarian, I stick a Montreal mini stack somewhere. Maybe perhaps Petri Domi or something cheap. Save a little bit of money. and see where it goes. All right, next up, the Nashville Predators travel. Well, really, they don't travel very far. They just go across the Brooklyn Bridge into Long Island to face the New York Islanders. Islanders opened up surviving for dear life on Thursday against the Carolina Hurricanes. They did win 2-1 in overtime, but they gave up a metric ton of shots again. And this is going to be a theme most of the season. New York, the Islanders are going to give up a lot defensively. And part of that reason is not just the defense. Part of that is just the fact that the team defense is just as hard as the actual defense. Especially when you look at the Islanders' bottom six, which is, if it's not the worst in the league, it's very close. And that is something that is going to be picked on. Not as much because the Islanders are at home, but a coach like Peter Laviolette of the Nashville Predators is going to find a way somehow. Now, what do you do? Do you go line one or line two from Nashville? Do you try to gamble and go at line one from the Islanders and understand the possibility that they could be cratered because of their defense? It's a good question. It's tough. You know, Barzal, Beauvillier, honestly, is a decent, you would almost say borderline contrarian mini stack. Just because a lot of more ownership, or at least more ownership, should be tilted to, around the Nashville side. That's the going belief anyway. I mean, look, it's not often that a road team has a win probability of near 60%, but in this case, Nashville does. The only interesting thing with this game is, how close to the over does this game get? Because the over-under is 6, and both teams can score goals. It's just a question of, can the Islanders get enough shots on net? I would like to think that they're going to get more than 20 shots in this game. I would think so. Anyway, Nashville does allow some shots. They do. They showed that last year, despite their record, that they just have a tendency. And they will let you back in games. Look, they let the Rangers back in for vast stretches, and the Rangers just couldn't convert. They did score late, but that made it a one-goal game instead of with seconds left, which doesn't really mean much of anything. But the Rangers did have their chances. It wasn't like they didn't. Am I playing Philip Forsberg? Yeah, I'm playing Philip Forsberg. I think that's always the number one question. It's like, why not at this point? All right. Getting on down the line, because you know we're going to move kind of fast here. One of the more intriguing games of the night, or at least the beginning of a beaucoup amount of games that could be a lot of fun. The Rangers travel up to Buffalo. For those that don't know, Buffalo was soundly beaten on Thursday night by a Boston team who had been drubbed 7-0 the night before themselves. Although it wasn't that close, the game was closer than it appeared. But the song kind of remains the same at Buffalo. When is this team going to break out? You see glimpses, you see chances, and you just don't see goals. Buffalo averaged less than 2 goals a game at home last year, and it looked like more of the same on Thursday night against Boston. The Rangers are a perfect team to play against. Look, Nashville basically could have wiped the walls with them on Thursday night. They could have. the Rangers have enough offense in them? And the answer seems to be yes. The Rangers' top two lines are formidable. I know people say that they're not, but they can be, especially against young teams like Buffalo that make a lot of mistakes. Carter Hutton was okay, but he gave up a kill. He gave up two goals pretty quickly in the first period, and the one goal was a killer to Zdeno Chara. You cannot give up goals like that as a starter in the National Hockey League. Can you trust either goalie in this game? The answer is no. Do I kind of like both power plays? The answer is yes. And that may be where ultimately you put your strength in on Saturday night. Take a look at that and kind of roll with it. Should be a lot of fun. I barring something crazy, the over should hit in that game. Buffalo is going to want to come out and make amends for what happened on Thursday night against Boston. Because normally Buffalo plays Boston halfway decently well, and that just did not translate at all. Also keep in mind that the Rangers are going to be playing, on Sunday as well. So again, it comes down to the issue. There's going to be some games where literally teams are going to conserve a little bit in some way, shape, or form. Again, you look at Buffalo line one against whatever second or third defensive pairing the Rangers muster up, and you have to like your chances at least a little bit. But I also like the Rangers' first unit power play against Buffalo's penalty kill, because Buffalo's penalty kill didn't show me anything in the preseason, didn't show me anything, much of anything in game one either. It was more Boston. Boston could have had two or three power play goals, to be perfectly honest. All right. Next up, Battle of Ontario, Toronto against Ottawa. Throw the records out the window, throw a little bit of everything out the window. Brady Tkachuk is expected not to play again. He was listed as highly doubtful on Friday evening. Saturday morning, they were going to try and see if he could give it a go. But look, let's be honest, it doesn't look all that promising. Swear it gets tough. If you're Ottawa, how the heck do you even try and stop? How do you stop Toronto if you're Ottawa? It's a great question. Look, let's be perfectly honest. Ottawa was horrendous against a Chicago team that was equally hard on defense. Honestly, if you expected a 6-5 or 7-6 game, I thought it was going to come out of that Ottawa-Chicago game, especially the way it started out. So, Toronto, which has periods of where they look completely asleep at the wheel against Montreal, may have a little bit more of the same, but that power play is dynamite. If you've ever seen Monty Python, you'll understand completely what I mean. It's ridiculous. It's one of those things you just have to watch, whether it's the first unit especially. And just imagine when they eventually get William Nylander back, how good the second unit will be. It's one of those pretty sobering thoughts where I do think a lot of people will be heavily on John Tavares, where maybe that allows you a few extra less percentage points to go for Austin Matthews again. Problem is this, at least when you look at this from the standpoint, Matthews has come up in value a little bit. Tavares has come up to 8,200. I'm not surprised at all. Frederik Andersen is the chalk goalie, almost, or borderline chalk goalie, if you can call it that, on Saturday night, just because of the amount of games. There's a lot of risky plays, too. One that I'm always interested in a little bit is how some of the prospects fare. And we'll see. Look, this is where it gets fun. Maxime Lajoie, who had a multi-point night for Ottawa against Chicago, is a kid to watch. I mean, look at Thomas Chabot is cheap as well. These are players both players are under $4,000 on FanDuel. They're both under 4,000. So basically, in so many words, they can be had. Colin White might be another oddity to look at. Although some will argue that that was an extreme fluke, what happened against Chicago. Zach Smith is dirt cheap. Almost every Ottawa player is pretty much dirt cheap. Alex Fermentin, as a matter of fact, one of the little speedsters from Ottawa, is league minimum, is DFS minimum. These are the kind of places you want to look at for value, because Toronto is not max priced, but awfully close with a majority of their players. I mean, when you look up Marner 6,500, Kadri's now nearing 6,000, Marlowe's near 6,000. You get the idea. Craig Anderson's dirt cheap. No, not touching him. Period. Not really touching Frederick Anderson in this game either. It's a little bit of a risk. He got bailed out Wednesday night against Montreal and actually played better as the game went on. But Ottawa-Toronto games often tend to be a little the higher scoring variety, and you can just mix and match stacks, mini stacks, however you want to. Toronto, ironically, has the highest win probability on the night, which is not surprising, 75%, and is expected to score 4 goals. Honestly, you expect it to be a 4-3 or 5-4 game. You know, maybe there's empty netters, say a 5-3 game, but you get the idea. There's going to be goals scored in that game. Ottawa can't keep up defensively, but Toronto also makes enough mistakes to keep it honest. All right. Whizzing along, Winnipeg travels to Dallas. Dallas with the 7 p.m. start, which means they won't get started till probably 7:15 or 7:20. So, hey, it's kind of how it goes. Now, Winnipeg, funny enough, won the other night 5-1 against St. Louis. You'd never know it. If it hadn't been for Connor Hellebuyck making 40-plus saves, that game might have been 5-1 St. Louis. St. Louis, actually, most of that game controlled play against the Jets. But it seemed like every key swing moment in that game went Winnipeg's way. And you have to give Winnipeg a lot of credit. They timed it well. They timed things well. They had an answer. Dallas is a dangerous team. Miro Heiskanen is a highlight reel to watch for a 19-year-old defenseman. Going to be fun to see. I mean, look, how does Ben Bishop look in game two? Game one, he was great. How's he doing game two? That's the question. Bishop's one of the higher price goalies on the night at 8,800 now on FanDuel. Hellebuyck is not too far behind him. There's lots of high priced talent in this game as well and options. It really is kind of a where do you go here? Do you slide back a little bit and go for Dallas's second line, perhaps, and maybe try to tie in John Klingberg. Again, options to look at. Do you stay away from Winnipeg's top line because they're expensive and try to go back to, say, Kyle Connor, etc.? You have to consider these things on Saturday to save a little bit of money. And that's the reality. Again, you know, this is a game where you may want to stay a little bit away from, at least exposure-wise, just because there are better games on the horizon to take a look at. That's kind of the debate and the argument as to where to go here. All right. Moving along, because as hard as to believe, yeesh, there's a lot of games to go. That's the problem with 11-game slate on Chicago and St. Louis. If you're not at least looking at St. Louis's first unit power play, there's something wrong. I mean, the Blues, 42 shots, one goal, three posts hit. There was a lot to like about their performance. It's just unfortunate that, you know, Jake Allen, it's kind of the problem. You know, Jake Allen was actually booed during the home opener. That's rough. How's he bounce back? This could unexpectedly turn into a high scoring game. And that's where you sit there and you just go, okay, I'm going to look at certain players. I'm going to use a few one-offs here and try to go for it. GPP, I'm going to try and find a way to hit up Vladimir Tarasenko in this game. And even Alex DeBrincat or Patrick Kane. Just because I want goals. These are guys I think that are going to score goals. The problem with St. Louis is it was expected that Colton Parayko would see a good bit of power play time. His power play usage was single-digit percent in game one. So who knows what is actually going to be deployed as opposed to what is projected, at least. Again, like I said, goaltenders you don't want to touch. Defense is totally hit or miss here with both teams. It's kind of a landmine, especially when there's better options out there with some of the other games. Speaking of another game where you don't quite know what to expect, there's Vegas who travels to Minnesota. Minnesota scored first in Colorado. And then the game just completely got away from them. How will they fare at home? Obviously, they do much better there. Vegas didn't look terrible against Philadelphia. They missed a lot of chances, though. Jonathan Marchessault missed one, missed a wide open net. Riley Smith missed a couple really good chances. That second line didn't look quite like you thought it might. And maybe the best thing for Vegas is to get on the road after having such a sour performance for their home opener. Yeah, it's the old adage of where do you go from here? And both teams just have to look up and go. I mean, look, Minnesota's not all that bad. Their top line is a good play, especially against a vulnerable Vegas defense. And Vegas did look at times flat out vulnerable. And we had said this all last year that Vegas, their defense was their Achilles heel. And that if you could get them moving and get Marc-Andre Fleury to change direction quickly, you could score some goals. And sure enough, that's what Philly did. They executed game plan pretty well. I would not be surprised for somebody to take at least a mini stack shot at either line one or line two for Minnesota, and maybe even the first unit power play, just to see what they could do. After that, gets a little wilder with the final three games of the slate. You know, some simple notes about these games in particular. Arizona got shut out by Dallas. Same kind of thing with Arizona. Arizona didn't look all that bad. They just started out poorly. And things kind of went. And then there's Anaheim, which was badly outplayed for vast amounts of their opener against San Jose, but found a way to win. I mean, they gave up a high look. Anaheim gave up a highlight shorthanded goal, highlight reel shorthanded goal to Tomas Hertl. That should have absolutely sunk them. They came right back, scored on the power play. They added another one in the third period. Anaheim's power play actually looked way more dynamic at times than their 5-on-5 play, which was outright sluggish. And Arizona, kind of like San Jose, does have enough speed to give Anaheim fits. Anaheim's speed game is going to be a work in progress where it's up, down, and all over the place. It will be difficult to gauge from a daily fantasy standpoint for potentially most of the first half of the season. Because, again, players are not healthy in the lineup. And when you have a lot of new infused talent, you get these erratic performances. John Gibson absolutely stood on his head. He's going to have to likely do it early and often, and probably again against an Arizona team that is going to come out with hellfire and brimstone, especially after what happened against Dallas. If you want at least a going plan, you find a way to get Oliver Ekman-Larsson in as a one-off. Maybe sneak Alex Goligoski in for some value. And if you want to get cute, you mini stack the first power play unit for Arizona and call it a day. As for Anaheim, yeah, I do much the same. I would look towards their power play one unit and keep it simple. Then there's this. Probably one of the DFS games of the night, besides the Toronto-Ottawa game. Philadelphia versus Colorado. Look, Philadelphia's defense is awful. Really, after the first pairing, it is a walking disaster. And I don't know how Vegas didn't score. Again, how Vegas did not score at least three or four goals easy in their home opener will be a mystery for weeks. Because the opportunities were plentiful and ridiculous. Yes. Gostisbehere and Provorov were excellent. But after that, it's just a cesspool. In Colorado, you can kind of say the same at times, but they can score at home. And again, McKinnon had 2 points, and Rantanen did well. And, you know, after a slow start, Colorado really picked it up against Minnesota and put the hammer down. They could do the same again on Saturday night. It doesn't hurt when you open the season with a couple home games. Philadelphia has an excellent power play. It will be fun to see how Colorado's penalty kill handles that, because Vegas had real problems with that and had real problems with Wayne Simmonds, who is going to be a guy to look at besides the usual cast of characters for the Philadelphia Flyers. Now, something also to note, if you pick goaltending in this game, you need your head examined. Just don't do it. Like I said, there's better choices throughout the slate. I mean, you could go Minnesota. You could go Arizona even. And there's a couple other options. You go super contrarian. You go at least a little bit different off the board. You could even say the Rangers, just because you know Lundqvist is going to face 35. no matter who plays, is going to face 35 flush shots or damn close. The GPPs, I'm trying to go for save count. I'm looking at two things. Save count and quality start potential. Quality start potential for me is not just a goalie that gives up a certain amount of goals and has a save percentage greater than league average. For me, it's two goals allowed or less, plain and simple. I keep it very regimented. Two goals allowed or less. I want the goalie that gives the best chance to allow a 0, 1, or 2 goals. Because anything more than that, minus losing 3 points, basically is offset by a win. And then again, it's just save count. And then you have to pray for 35 saves to get you, say, 7 points on DraftKings, 20-something points on FanDuel. And that's just kind of how it goes. By the way, here's where it gets interesting. The big question, the final game of the night. Calgary and Vancouver. What do you do at Calgary? Do you hope for a late hammer? Do you think that they can fix whatever the heck happened the other night where they couldn't, the power play just couldn't function? You'd like to think that they learned something. One of my concerns with a Jeff Ward coach power play is how dysfunctional it looks at times. There's no Taylor Hall on Calgary, to be perfectly honest. Yes, there's Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan and Mark Giordano, et cetera. But those are core players that have had problems and gone into extensive funks on the man advantage before. And having a coach that's not particularly all that efficient, his bottom line numbers looked great, but his overall deeper metrics did not, is a little bit troubling. Vancouver is a young team, though, as many have said, and well documented. And they did allow a ton of shots in the third period, lots of scoring chances. And if it wasn't for Jacob Markstrom and his 30-plus saves, it would have completely disintegrated. But they found ways to score. Elias Pettersson is quite good. I'm interested to see what Vancouver 1 does. Just because they were a little bit invisible at times, and they were cratered consistently against Calgary's better lines. Calgary will also be without Travis Hamonic, so that's something to consider too. Again, if you're going to go late hammer and try to go Mike Smith, it's a high-risk gamble, but it could work. Calgary had to learn something from the other night, and if they didn't, they're in a ton of trouble this early in the season. All right, about 15 seconds left or less. I'd like to thank everybody that will be listening in on the archives tomorrow. We will be working on this throughout the season, as we've said before. And basically, we're going to carry you into the archive now. All right. Simply put, some news and notes and wisdom for the 1 o'clock game between the New Jersey Devils and the Edmonton Oilers. Jokingly, this probably is one of those games that literally you would have a tough time to gauge on if it was on the slate. I would even have a tough time gauging this one. That's rough. Now, no Jesper Bratt for New Jersey. Broken jaw. So a couple, probably 2 to 3 weeks. The one thing I point to is the last time these two teams played in Edmonton last year, and Connor McDavid had a field day. He could have had 5 or 6 points in that game. And the same thing might happen here, that he has the kind of potential where he could have several points in this game. But Keith Kincaid's been up and down all preseason. He's had good and bad and ugly performances. You don't really know what you're going to get from Kincaid nightly. And arguably New Jersey fans are counting down the days until Corey Schneider does return, because it will add some stability. Whether it's enough or not is another question. But it's a game obviously being played overseas. Something to note that may not mean a lot to people, but the rink that they are using is about 3 feet short of NHL regulation. The width is the same, but the length is about 3 feet. I think it's 197 feet. It's not the normal 200 feet. So the neutral zone is trimmed a little bit. That might be an even bigger advantage. Plays will be on top of you faster. 3 feet doesn't sound like a lot, but it is. Anybody that has played on a smaller rank will tell you the game just comes at you faster. Way, way faster. I'm expecting a higher event game, particularly in the second and third periods. There is going to be some sort of feeling out process with a few mistakes in the first period. New Jersey's power play is something to look at. Just because Edmonton's penalty kill doesn't inspire confidence. It just doesn't. And until they show that it can, again, it's one of those things where it's like, well, you go to the well and you see what happens. The funny thing about this game is it's dead even bookie-wise. It's almost near even. And if it stays that way, there's a lot of money that's going to be on New Jersey, because people just think New Jersey can win this game. The over-under six, there's not much reason to be hesitant about that. I'd actually take the over in this game. Just because it has that look. I mean, for all the talk of New Jersey, this and that, and whatever. New Jersey, over its final 20 games last season, scored 3.15 goals a game. They also allowed 2.65. And then the playoffs proceeded to give up a metric ton of goals early. Then Corey Schneider came in and the goals for Tampa started to dry up a little bit. Again, this could be deja vu. So it's definitely something to watch. If you're Edmonton, look to the top power play. See what you can mix in. See who's going to play, and go from there. That would be your best bet. Does look like obviously Cam Talbot versus Keith Kincaid, but do expect the unexpected. That's kind of the thing. Yeah, you're playing overseas. There's going to be some nerves and such involved. But the top line should be able to feast on, especially if they can get their matchups out. And that's kind of the way to go about it. All right, ladies and gentlemen, again, thanks for listening to Fantasy Hockey X. You can find this on iTunes via the Hard Hits Radio Network. And until next week. Basically, we leave you with a little bit of my favorite.